Hello, everyone. This is Jorge Facinetti, and you're listening to another exclusive podcast from Pituitary World News. We hope you all had a great holiday and that the new year started with a bang. We have, as you know, great plans for Pituitary World News in 2016, so we hope you all stay tuned and involved. It's good to be back after a nice break, and here we are again chatting about interesting things affecting the pituitary gland. So good morning, Dr. Blevins.
Good morning, Jorge, and thank you. Yes, it's good to be back. As you know, I've been sick for about 2.5 weeks now with the creeping crud or whatever. Yes, doctors get sick too, and we can feel just as miserably as some of our patients do. But I'm on the mend and happy to be back to Pituitary World News, contributing information with you that can help those patients with pituitary disorders, their caregivers, friends, family, and their providers to take better care of those individuals affected with pituitary diseases.
Well, you sound much better than the last time I talked to you, so it looks like you're on the mend. So the subject today is growth hormone, hormone excess, and how it affects us all, and some of the societal issues and controversies that it generates. You really don't have to go very far to read about human growth hormone. Just Google it and you'll see what I mean. There has been a whole industry built around it to build muscle and fitness and basically chase a fountain of youth. And recently, as you all are probably aware, even though this is not new, several prominent athletes have been linked to the use of human growth hormone. Now, as you know, HGH has been banned from the International Olympic Committee, the National Football League, Major League Baseball, and the World Anti-Doping Agency, and it's really affected athletes in track and field, baseball, and, as you know, cycling. So why don't you give us your thoughts on this and tell us your observations and feelings about this issue?
It seems that a day doesn't go by where you don't hear about some athlete who's been busted, if you will, for overutilization of natural substances to try to enhance performance. I can remember when I was a kid, you know, hearing about football players using anabolic steroids, and a couple of them actually died of liver disease as a result. And you know, it's fascinating to me that individuals are willing to take the health risks to be able to gain their performance advantages. But I think it's an alarming problem that the psyche of the human being is such that they will take excessive hormones to try to score better, be stronger, be faster, whatever the case may be, in the realm of competition where there are certainly financial rewards as a result of being the fastest or scoring first, for example.
Well, yes, I think what really surprises me as someone who actually was affected by excess production of growth hormone is how much misinformation there is, and indeed the dangers that come with it, with its use and overuse, and how little concern some people have about its effects. I suppose many athletes think they are invincible, but the system itself makes it almost okay. Expected. You know, these guys, I think, are the modern gladiators, and the pressure to compete and perform for some must be overwhelming.
Well, the really great irony is that a baseball player or a football player could take growth hormone to try to enhance performance and then be banned from the sport, for example, for such, or fined and criminalized, whatever. But then if a young man has a growth hormone secreting pituitary adenoma that leads to giantism and he has any ability on the basketball court, they sign him up, though he has a disease state that might confer an increased performance ability. Certainly these gentlemen are taller, and women too, in women's basketball, I suppose. But the interesting thing is their arthritis and the arthralgias limit their performance. They tend to have a lot of knee and hip problems, so they, while you think that they may perform better and have a performance advantage over the normal healthy athlete, they actually don't have very long careers because of the consequences of their disease process.
Okay, so let's take growth hormone, for example. Why do people take it? Why do normal people take it? We read about hormone deficiencies, and people who have growth hormone deficiency take growth hormone and feel better. So it has positive benefits. You have discussed in the past in our podcasts and articles the many benefits, but why would a normal person take growth hormone?
That's a very good question, Jorge. When normal people take growth hormone, if they take normal amounts, all they simply do is replace their own body's endogenous production of growth hormone. They make normal amounts of IGF-1 and function normally. But it's the athlete who intentionally takes a little too much growth hormone that actually starts to get some of those performance advantages. And we know that growth hormone is anabolic. It builds muscle, increases muscle mass, increases muscle strength. Cardiac performance is improved, fat mass is decreased. So taking a little bit too much growth hormone certainly can confer performance advantages, just as taking growth hormone, if you're hypopituitary, can bring you from a state of arrears to a normal state or even slightly better in some regards, like oxygen carrying capacity, etc. So growth hormone does facilitate performance, but in my opinion, it's an unfair way to do it. It gives an unfair advantage. It's like the people who take erythropoietin to stimulate red cell mass. You know, so that they can carry more oxygen and either run marathons or do long bicycling races or something like that. You know, it's taking the normal human body and creating an uneven playground where you now have a performance advantage due to alteration in your normal body composition. And I think that's the big issue in regards to sports. But growth hormone is one of the commonly abused substances. I remember seeing a professional athlete many years ago who came to me to see whether the pituitary was working, and everything was fine, but the IGF-1 level was elevated, and I was almost certain that individual was probably taking growth hormone to enhance performance. And many people do it. They all feel that they have to be able to level the playing ground against those people who are doping and getting away with it. But as a physician, as an endocrinologist and a human being and one who enjoys competition, I'm opposed to that. I like to see the natural human body and people who train hard and work hard and see what they can do naturally without all this doping and drugs that people use to try to come out on top.
So what do we do about this? What does society do about this problem?
I think you're right on target. It is something that society has to do. And, you know, society has made the decision to criminalize the use of these hormones, but I'm not sure that the general society, meaning the spectators, really truly understand the potential health risks that these athletes are undertaking when they use the drugs in excess as they do. And frankly, I think that, you know, if it's your football team on the field, you want them to do whatever they can to win. So probably most of the fans really don't care or have an opinion. So it's a very difficult to address this issue. I try to think about it as a two-pronged thing. One, is it a criminal activity to use a drug that's a controlled substance? And generally speaking, yes, it is. You know, growth hormone is a controlled substance. Testosterone is a controlled substance. It's just like the narcotics, you know, not the same level of control, but they're scheduled drugs, and abusing them is a criminal activity. Maybe we need to decriminalize that, but the penalties really need to come from society and the sports involved, where these folks really, truly are banned. You know, I think that track and field has been able to do that with some of their athletes probably more successfully than any other sport. But, you know, you see these guys running 100 meters and you just look at them and think that's not a natural human body. There's got to be something added to that. So I don't know what the real answer is, but hopefully society and lawmakers can get together and decide on the most appropriate ways to deal with individuals who choose to dope, if you will, and create an environment where the decision would be that it's just not worth it to not play baseball or football or whatever. So I won't use drugs and I'll compete naturally, and hopefully everyone else will do the same. And if not, they'll be kicked out of the sport. So that's pretty much my take on that matter.
Well, I think I agree with everything you just said. I can add that I have a tough time wrapping my thoughts around anyone, whether it's an athlete or not, taking anything in excess when they know it is going to be harmful. Personally, I think mostly about the effects that excess growth hormone and through my acromegaly had on my bones and joints over the years, and find it difficult to understand, again, why anyone would want to take it when they don't need to or have to. I do remember my strength and muscle tone in when I was in my 30s and early 40s. I could certainly hit the head out of a tennis ball or hike in the mountains all day long. But shortly after my middle 40s, I started having knee, hip, and back problems to the point where I had to quit playing it, and it all resulted, as you know, in two hip replacements and chronic joint issues.
That's an interesting perspective. I appreciate you sharing that with us as a group.
Of course. I don't mind sharing anything that could help or shed some light on any subject, particularly if it can help someone else. Okay, now I want to ask you about taking medications that make you feel better. In your practice, do you encounter patients who have, let's say, hypopituitarism and want to take high doses of medication to feel better?
Well, in fact, yes, that's a unfortunately a very common problem. We see a lot of patients who have had hypopituitarism and felt poorly for years. We might start them on hormone replacement. And either they feel better and want to feel even more better, or else they don't quite feel right yet and want to feel better. And unfortunately, a lot of those patients self-medicate and adjust their doses of medication. I've seen patients come in with growth hormone excess, thyroid hormone excess, steroid excess, all because they felt like that they would do better if they simply went up on the dose of their medication because they felt better when they started it. Some of the worst cases I've seen are men who do this the same with testosterone. They just keep ramping the dose up, and they come in with astronomical testosterone levels, and they still don't feel as if they're on enough testosterone. And I think in that setting, and in all these settings, one of the things that happens is you shut down the number of receptors on the cells, so the extra testosterone doesn't do anything anymore, so people feel like they have to keep going up on their testosterone. One of the worst examples I ever saw was a patient who felt better on steroids, and then when he had the flu, he went up on his steroids, as people should if they have hypopituitarism or adrenal insufficiency. And he felt better because he went up on his steroids, so he stayed on the higher dose. And then he started getting side effects of the high dose. He was taking about three times the normal amount of steroids. And he remembered that he felt better when he went up on his steroids, and he didn't think that his symptoms were due to steroid excess. He just thought he needed more steroids, so he went up. He finally comes in to me taking about 10 times the usual daily dose of steroids for about 2 months. I hadn't seen him in over a year. He related this story to me. And then he was markedly Cushingoid, severe weakness, skin bruising and stretching, and a significant amount of weight gain, and just felt horrible. And it was because he thought steroids were going to make him feel better, and he kept ramping up the dose, sort of a vicious cycle upwards, and his health was a vicious cycle downwards. I've seen the same thing in patients who take thyroxine, and they figure that a little bit made them feel better, so they want to take more and feel better. And many patients have become very hyperthyroid and as a result had cardiac abnormalities even. And there are several case reports in the literature of that happening as well, especially when people start abusing well, I shouldn't say abusing, but let me say taking too much extra T3. That can be a real problem with cardiac events and bone loss, and especially in women. So, yes, we do see this problem more commonly than I would like to see it.
That's really interesting. So as an endocrinologist, how do you deal with that? How do you educate patients? What do you tell them?
Well, at the risk of oversimplifying my work, I want to do so to help everybody understand the role of an endocrinologist. And there's an old term, regression to the mean, where, and that's a statistical term, but, you know, there is a mean and a standard deviation for everything in this world that we can count, including laboratory test results and hormone levels and people, et cetera. And it's really like playing Goldilocks. You know, if a hormone's too low, we bring it up to normal. If a hormone's too high, we bring it down to normal. And we're basically regressing to the mean. We're trying to put things into the normal population ranges. I've talked before about what a normal population range on a laboratory result means. And, you know, everybody's going to be somewhere differently in the normal range compared to the next patient that you see. But as a physician and a patient, you work together to find out what's normal for that person. I do think it's obvious to an endocrinologist, maybe not obvious to patients, but we see patients who have disease states due to excess hormone levels and patients who have disease states due to low hormone levels, and we try to normalize those. And I don't want anybody taking growth hormone to be on too much and have a high IGF-1, just like I don't want my acromegalic patients to have a high IGF-1. And my patients who have hyperthyroidism, I want their thyroid functions to be normal. And I certainly don't want my patients who have hypothyroidism taking thyroxine to have hyperthyroidism just because they feel like they're going to feel better. And I know it's difficult for patients to understand, but, you know, I've been a physician for, gosh, almost 30 years now, and doing pituitary endocrinology for over a quarter of a century. And with all that experience, you develop sort of an approach to managing the hormone deficient states and the hormone excess states. And the one thing that I have learned throughout all of those years is that normal is normal, and it's best to be there. And I usually don't feel that it's appropriate to have high hormone levels just because you don't feel well. And that's largely related to the fact that because the human body is a very complex thing, and endocrine disorders are complex as well, but most of the symptoms of endocrinopathies are also common symptoms in other disease states. And just because you have an endocrine disorder, if you don't feel well, it doesn't mean it's due to the endocrine problem, and especially if your hormone levels are normal. So I think that overall the best approach is to play Goldilocks and regress to the mean and find things in the normal range or in the middle of the normal range, and then to fine-tune or optimize therapy. And if a patient has, say, a low thyroid hormone level and don't feel quite well, even though it's normal, we'll push the dose up and get them into the higher part of the normal range. But we certainly want to avoid getting them to be high just because, you know, any state of hormone excess is no good, just as a state of hormone deficiency is no good.
Interesting. It really makes you think about the design of the human body and the way our physiology works, where things are simply just supposed to be normal. And we should be grateful for the opportunity to get things back to normal with modern medicine and all these great modern drugs. It's such a balancing act and such an art form, I suppose, not only to keep things in the normal range, but also to understand and define what that normal range is. It reminds me about a book I recently read, which attempts to analyze how everything we can count, like you say, falls within a statistical mean and a standard deviation, and everything that's outside that range is just not reliable or sustainable, or like we're discussing here, not normal. The book is called A Drunkard's Walk, How Randomness Rules Our Lives. It's really a fascinating read. I recommend it. So we'll put a link on our site, just in case you're interested, or just drop us a line and I'll send you the link. Anyway, Dr. Blevins, great chat. This was a fascinating subject indeed. It's interesting how our talk went from discussing athletes taking too much GH, the patients taking too much growth hormone, to really normal people looking perhaps for the fountain of youth and doing a lot of damage in the process. Lots more to discuss on this subject, and it would be great to have our community weigh in on this. We do learn a lot from your comments and contributions, so don't be shy. Well, time is running out, so thanks again, Dr. Blanis, for all you do for Pituitary Well News and pituitary patients in general.
Well, Jorge, as usual, it's been a tremendous discussion, and always nice to chat, and look forward to our next podcast. Have a good day.
Indeed. Stay tuned. Lots more to come. You've been listening to an exclusive Pituitary World News podcast with Dr. Louis Blanis. This is Jorge Fascinetti. Have a great day.